So I was looking at a signed picture of William Osler and one of his sayings that was on an auction, and it was going for like $1,000. So I said, you know what? This would be amazing in my office. And I kind of talked to the auction guy and I set a limit at 3,000. So if the bidding went up, and there was only about an hour left in this bidding, and it hadn't exceeded 1,000 yet. So I said, okay, you can go up to 3,000. So time was going, I was watching, 15 minutes left, and then boom, someone put in a bid for 3,000, matching mine. I really wanted this thing, and that was super expensive, but I went up to 3,500. Boom, someone put in 4,000. Boom, 5,000. Boom, 8,000. The thing ended up selling for $30,000, not to me, because every hospital wants a picture of William Osler in their waiting room, in their lobby, because William Osler is the great American medical hero. And hospitals have tons of money. And the reason they have tons of money is because they rejected the very philosophy of William Osler. And that irony has never been lost on me. I will never own an Osler drawing. But if I wanted to get a signed picture of William Welch, the eugenicist who buried William Osler, the co-founder of Hopkins, a man who made the Flexner Report possible and changed the direction of medicine from one that was patient-centric to one that was number-centric. If I wanted a signed picture of that schmo, I could probably get it for nothing. In fact, I could probably get a signed picture of Flexner for nothing. Those are the guys who imprinted our entire medical system today. Carnegie and Rockefeller imprinted our medical system because they determined which medical schools were going to live and die. So as we get into part two of the Flexner Report, let's go into what it actually did. We talked about the surroundings, the times, the fact that they wanted to move away from the barbaric type of patent medicine that existed. Osler had his vision of teaching people, medical students, to be critical thinkers, to reject pharmaceutical solutions, to talk to the patient to understand them, to understand the nuances and uncertainties in medical care, to understand that each patient will behave differently to various diseases and to treatments. But uncertainty is not what anybody in the William Welch slash Flexner school wanted. The whole German philosophical tradition, the one that Einstein so vehemently rejected, the one that led to the rise of Nazism, the one that was adopted and was also encouraged by the American eugenicists, was exactly the opposite of what Osler believed in. The German system believed in absolutely no uncertainty. There was a truth. There was a single scientific truth. That truth was taught to students through their teachers. It was absolute dogma that you were not allowed to question your teachers. This bothered Einstein the most, because that guy questioned everything. So you couldn't question your teachers. The teachers were the absolute authority. There was one truth. That truth was determined by the previous scientist. If any scientist was going to debunk that truth, it was going to take an act of God to do that. Most scientists in the German philosophical school, including ones who won the Nobel Prize, almost all of whom became Nazis, only expanded upon the truth. And in the medical world, the same thing was true. As we mentioned, it was believed in the German philosophical medical tradition that measurements and numbers made everything absolute. One patient was the same as the next. The body was as measurable as a bar of steel, and it was up to doctors to figure out how to measure the body, find the abnormalities, and fix them. Again, one right answer thinking. The way the Flexner Report incorporated that thinking into the medical system was simply to standardize everything that occurred in medical school. While the Osler system believed that true practicing doctors should teach students and that the science of medicine and the taking care of patients should both occur simultaneously during the 4 years of medical school, the Welch slash Flexner system was not that way at all. A, every school had to have full-time faculty, no more community doctors teaching students. Full-time faculty who were researchers. Maybe they had token medical experience. Maybe they saw a patient here and there, but their primary job was research. Because what Welch and Flexner believed was that the people who delved into science were the ones who should be teaching students. So the first 2 years of medical school were pretty much bereft of any patient contact. I just had my two kids. My daughter just started medical school. My son just graduated. Compared to what I did, there's a little bit more patient exposure in the first 2 years, but it is still token. You do a little thing here and say, "Ooh, I saw this patient. Oh, that nice." Now back to the books. The first 2 years of medical school are purely memorization and regurgitation. As I told my two kids, go through it, get your grades, and then knock it out of your brain because you're never going to use this stuff. And unfortunately, the science is important, but under the Flexner-Welsh system, the science is separated from the patient. So we don't know as a student which science is important, so we just memorize a bunch of stuff. The idea of memorizing and regurgitating is extremely important to this philosophy because, as you'll see, as doctors progress, they are expected to follow protocols, memorize them, and institute them. They're not supposed to question the protocols. When a cardiologist pulls out his calculator to determine your risk of getting a stroke with atrial fibrillation, that cardiologist has no idea what went into that calculator, what patients were used to determine these things, what kind of strokes that the patients had, whether they were meaningful or just a blip on a CAT scan. None of that matters to the cardiologist because that cardiologist is told and believes, because he or she was trained in this system, that some expert gave him or her this calculator and there's an absolute truth here and it's not to be questioned. That's how students are taught. There's very little nuance. There's absolute certainty in medical school. So the first 2 years, anatomy, physiology, pathophysiology, histology, all sorts of ologies. You learn what cells look like, pharmacology, the way drugs are shaped. You learn various cycles in the body. Again, none of this is put in a clinical context so doctors can understand what it actually means. It is all to teach upcoming doctors that the human body acts one way in everybody. It's universal. And to get into medical school, you have to take a standardized test. You can be the most stellar person in the world, but this one test will keep you out of medical school. And it's called the MCAT. And it's based on multiple choice questions that ask about very specific scientific topics. And there's one right answer. For everything, there's one right answer. As you go into medical school, you continue to be graded with standardized tests, again, with one right answer. Those first 2 years of medical school, you get several tests, and then you get this big test called the Boards Part 1, and you have to pass it, and it's one right answer. Only scientific stuff with a wallpapering of patients over it, so it kind of has the pretense that it relates to patients. Again, this is what Welsh wanted. He wanted to make sure that students became mini scientists, that they believed that the human body was a scientific machine that could be understood if you understood basic science. Fast forward 110 years, nothing's changed. Exactly the same curriculum that Welch came up with, that the AMA insisted be in any medical school that was going to be sanctioned, and that was based on the German model that still exists in Germany today. Now, the next 2 years, people went through the hospital, but again, they were taught primarily by either specialist doctors or research doctors, not people out in the community taking care of real patients. Again, this hasn't changed. There's token exposure to actual patients in the community, but medical students are essentially trained on patients who failed the community medical practice and slipped through to get sick enough to be in a hospital. And they're the ones they see. So they assume everyone's like this. You know, they don't understand prevention. They don't understand nuance. They don't understand the differences in drug treatment for different patients. They understand extreme diseases that have to be treated in a singular way. That's the next 2 years. Again, you don't, during those 2 years, start going back to the basic science. They're completely segregated. And again, every rotation in those 2 years is met by a standardized test that you must pass with one right answer, because in the Welsh system, there is one right answer. So after that, you do a residency, which is again, hospital-based. So everyone who comes through the system learns this basic science and this hospital-based system based on protocols, one way to do things, tested through multiple choice, and they get spit out into a medical system that in which they're supposed to act that way, because all their credentialing for the rest of their career is based on their ability to follow clinical practice guidelines with one right answer, and to take standardized tests with one right answer. This is how doctors are. This is what Welch wanted. Welch believed there is no uncertainty or nuance in the medical system in the human body. And as we mentioned, Welch and his eugenic colleagues and Flexner did not even think you should talk to patients. Talking to patients could only confuse you, because God forbid, what if their numbers show one thing and the patient says something that contradicts the numbers? Well, the patient's wrong. This just happened to my father in the hospital. He was clearly dehydrated, but some number they measured showed he had too much fluid, so they wouldn't give him enough fluids, and he tanked. So, you know, it was based on one test, because that's how doctors are trained. You looked at him, you knew he was dehydrated, but the numbers said otherwise. So that's American medicine, and it makes a lot of money for a lot of people. So how is this enforced? Flexner identified the schools that he felt were good enough to be put into the new system. All the other schools basically were now sanctioned as failing schools, and if anyone graduated from them, they would not be credentialed. Because now the AMA was going to be in charge of all credentialing and all licensing. So unless you graduated from a school that was imprinted with the Welch-Flexner system, you were not allowed to practice medicine. You were essentially considered a medical heretic, and you couldn't get paid. So you got to pass muster. So all the schools had to change. Well, this was expensive. They had to have full-time faculty, and they had to change their entire system. They had to have research facilities. Now most of the work was going to be done in classrooms instead of out in the community. You couldn't have community doctors helping. How are you going to pay for all this? Well, in comes industry, right? Especially the Rockefeller and Carnegie Institute said, we will give massive grants to the schools that are willing to follow the system. But if you verge from the system, you lose the money. If you lose the money, you can't hire faculty. Can't hire faculty, you don't become a sanctioned medical school. It was control. The AMA had the control. The Carnegie and Rockefeller Institute had control, and that control flowed down to people like William Welch, the scientists in these institutions who worked with industry, who now we're going to run the whole show. And we're going to train a bunch of robotic doctors to kind of follow protocols, because this would be useful down the road. It was going to be a science, hard science, not an art, which is what Osler believed it should be, an art where you learn, and the older you get, the wiser you get, the more patients you see, the more you understand the nuances. No, calculators, protocols, absolute rights and wrongs, multiple choice, were how Welch saw it right from the beginning. And it's important to know that Carnegie and Rockefeller only funded the places that they felt would benefit them. As we'll see in the next lecture, schools that trained, for instance, African-American doctors had no interest to Carnegie and Rockefeller, so they were not willing to give money to those places, and they collapsed. Women, chiropractic, allopathic, osteopathic schools all died, gone. There were no more of that. This became a white male profession, mostly wealthy people, because you still had to pay tuition, and mostly people who were willing to play this game and to become the doctors of the Welch model. Now, as time went on, and we'll see it in the lecture after next, as technology became more expansive, as hospitals grew, it was very easy for industry to take the place of what Rockefeller and Carnegie did. So currently today, the pharmaceutical and device company basically own every medical school in the country. There's not a single medical school in the country that can function without the largesse of the pharmaceutical companies that pay for all the research that goes on in there, which pays the salaries of their full-time faculty, which again is a requirement that they have. So they are owning the medical schools. They own medical education. But more than that, they also are the primary payers of the CDC, Centers of Disease Control. No wonder COVID was handled so well. They are the primary funders of the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, that that makes decisions about which devices and drugs will be approved. In fact, the drug companies pay for that entire process of drug and device approval. They pay the most of the amount to the American Alzheimer's Association, American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association. They pay huge amounts to congressmen and congresswomen on both sides of the aisle. So the drug companies, by doing that, they have influenced Medicare. And by influencing Medicare, they've influenced every insurance company. So they basically own the show. The AMA has lost its role, but centralized medicine occurs in a different way now through boards such as the Board for Internal Medicine that I belong to, cardiology, pulmonary, all these things, which now tell you what to do. There are protocols that tell you what to do, and Medicare tells you what to do too. You have to follow, that you have to get people's blood pressure below a certain number. Well, what if my patient does poorly? Well, don't talk to your patient. This is the number. Again, that's the Welch model. There's one right answer. It doesn't matter how your patient behaves when you get their blood pressure below a certain number. You better damn well get it below that number. That's why everyone's on blood thinners, right? It does make sense to put most people on blood thinners. The benefit is so small. The risk is so huge to a lot of people. Why are we measuring cholesterol? Why do we have a diabetes epidemic and we're over-treating diabetes? Why are people getting stents? Why are people going to the hospital constantly for things that should be treated at home? Why don't doctors talk about diet and exercise? Why don't we look at patients as individual people? This is the result of Flexner. The whole goal of Flexner was to centralize and standardize the medical system and to invite industry in to run the show. And the results speak for themselves. So we're going to talk next time about the inherent racism in the Flexner report, and it wasn't subtle, let's put it that way. This report that still is being used to control our medical system overtly was as racist as they come, and no one has really changed that. And after that, we're going to talk about the medical society that has come from the Flexner report in 2022, and we will use COVID as an example of the most extreme way that this type of medical thinking has led to utterly disastrous results, even as people think they're being saved. And that's the great irony, and to me, the great amazement of Flexner is that so many people think that by measuring and fixing, we are saving their lives, and actually we are doing just the opposite, but we are enriching a lot of people and making a lot of other people happy because they think they're getting the most thorough care in the world. So congratulations, Welch and Flexner. Their pictures may not be worth anything, but they certainly changed the world in the worst possible way.